You are listening to the Already Gone podcast, sharing stories of the missing, the murdered, the mysterious, and the lost. Today we're off to Charm City, Baltimore, Maryland, revisiting the 1996 murder of 23-year-old Jody LeCornu. March 1st, 1996 didn't start out like any other day, not for Jody. She and her live-in boyfriend, a man she'd been close to for many years, were in a bad place. So bad, in fact, that when Jody left their apartment that day, his parting words to her were, "Don't come home." These are words he would live to regret. Jody's movements throughout the day are unclear until the evening, which finds her at the Mount Washington Tavern, a bar not too far from her apartment, and the Towson campus where she was a student. Jody is drinking her sorrows away. Late in the evening, around closing time, the bar's owner, an acquaintance of hers, asks if she will drive one of their employees home. Jody agrees and drives the young man to his house. After dropping him off, she stops and purchases a six-pack of beer. Jody parks her white Honda Civic in the parking lot of a Calder store. If you aren't familiar with Calder, they are a now-defunct discount retail chain similar to TJ Maxx or Marshall's. While parked, she takes out her cell phone and places some calls, including one to the Mount Washington Tavern. The bartender answers the phone, and Jody asks to talk to the owner, the same person who asked her to drive the employee home. But the owner isn't available, and Jody doesn't leave a message. While sitting in the Calder parking lot, her car is in full view of the nearby Giant store, a gas station, and a Boston Market restaurant. Snow is swirling through the air, a late winter dusting, making the roads slick and decreasing visibility for drivers. Jody, who has a tendency to be anxious, would not normally be out on a night like this. But then, the entire day, since her boyfriend told her not to come home the morning prior, Jody hasn't been herself. What happens next is seen by witnesses and corroborated by video. Jody is approached by a man driving a white car, possibly a BMW. He exits the car and walks over to Jody in her Honda. Despite the cold and snowy weather, Jody rolls her window down. After a brief exchange with the man, he walks away from Jody and her car, then pulls out a handgun and shoots at Jody through the rear window on the driver's side of the vehicle. The bullet shatters the glass, travels through the driver's seat, and strikes Jody in the back. She's mortally wounded. The gunshot draws the attention of people at Giant, the gas station, and the restaurant. Someone picks up a phone and calls 911. Onlookers watch in a mix of curiosity and horror as the Honda drives across the road into the parking lot of the Giant store. The man in the white car follows her. He pulls into the lot and watches from his vehicle as Jody slowly circles. Her car strikes a curb, bringing it to a halt. The unknown man drives over to Jody's car and stops. He exits his vehicle and approaches Jody. Her window is still down. He leans into the car, places it in park, and picks something up from the passenger seat. Then he calmly gets back in his vehicle and drives away, turning onto York Road and then Walker Avenue. Jody is dead. Her murder and the robbery from her vehicle was witnessed by half a dozen people and recorded by security cameras. In a cruel twist, the cameras at the Giant store, the parking lot where her vehicle came to a halt, were not working that day. In another twist, Jody was shot in the Calder parking lot, under the jurisdiction of the police in the city of Baltimore. Her death occurred in the Giant parking lot in the jurisdiction of Baltimore County, making it their case. With the anniversary of her murder just weeks away, I spoke with Jody's twin sister, Jenny Carreri, about the murder, the investigation, and why she's filed suit against Baltimore County as she works to find out who murdered her older sister on a snowy night 20 years ago.
So the thing about her person, I want to make it clear, she was very afraid. I mean, everything she did that night was not in her normal character. She suffered with anxiety. She and her boyfriend had gotten into a fight, and that Friday morning he told her not to come home that night. And they had been living together about 5 years.
Wow.
And so that's when she went to the Mount, she went to the Mount Washington Tavern, and she was there a lot of hours at the tavern, several things. She would not, just knowing her personality, she wouldn't have just aimlessly gone into the night and not had a plan. I mean, she was afraid to drive in the snow.
And it was snowing that night.
Yes, yes. To, you know, to be in the dark, to be dry. She would not have gone to sit in a parking lot. That's why first, you know, for so long, you know, they kind of said, oh, it was random. But, you know, with her window rolled down. And so there was two phone calls that I know about. There might have been a third. So when she left the bar, somebody asked her to take one of the employees home who couldn't drive, another person that couldn't drive. So he was sort of mentally challenged, something. Okay. He couldn't drive. So she wouldn't have driven him home either. She would have been, I mean, she was afraid of everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, she was very apprehensive.
Yes. So to drive him home, to drive in the snow, to go sit in a parking lot, she did stop at a liquor store and bought a six-pack of beer.
Okay.
Which is another sign maybe she was going to meet somebody. There was rumors that possibly there was something going, this is another part of the story, that there might have been something going on with her and the owner of the bar. That was the other phone call that she made, was calling looking for the owner of the bar when she was sitting in that parking lot.
She could have just been calling to say, he's home, it's done. Or does that not seem?
I never thought about that. I never thought about that. That's an interesting point, but I don't think so. I mean, just the fact that I don't think that would be a reason. I mean, I think I don't know if there was anything going on with the two of them.
Right.
But she was calling. I mean, she could have just told the bartender that answered the phone, right? But
right.
She was specifically looking for the owner. So the bar knew she was in the parking lot, and this other suspect knew she was in the parking lot. And I'm not sure if there was another, I tend to think there might have been another phone call, but I'm not sure what that other call was. So she would not have just gone randomly. That's why the more, you know, when I go through all these theories over the years, that I think she was meeting somebody there.
Okay, because it really sounds like her day started poorly and then was sort of off kilter the entire day. She broke up with her long-term live-in boyfriend, and then everything else was sort of off of her normal course of actions up until her murder. So the whole day was just off.
Yes, yes. And interestingly, the detectives have told me that the suspect has ties to the Mount Washington Tavern.
The man who killed Jody was caught on video and seen by many witnesses. In this section, we discuss the details of the crime.
That video, they should be able to do more with it. And I was reading something that's a giant parking lot. Is that
their videos were down? Their cameras were down, apparently. Where
oh, that just,
is,
yeah.
Yeah, but there was quite a few witnesses. I mean, you know, if they saw they saw this person put her car in park.
Yeah, when you have to really lean into someone's car to grab the gear shift, too.
Right. Yeah. So they saw that, and they saw, you know, something being taken out of her car.
Okay. Which, now, was she robbed? Was her purse and wallet still in her car?
Well, it's interesting. They think she had a backpack, and that was gone. I don't know where they got. I don't know if her, you know, boyfriend said that she had a backpack. That was gone, but they, you know, it's like, so they say that's gone, and then they say, we're trying to figure out what was taken out of the car. They say that'll solve the case. That'll, you know, that's the key to the case, what was taken out of her car. So I think if she was robbed, the person, if her window was rolled down, this is just my opinion, he would have gone up and maybe put a gun to her head right there. Why talk with her and then shoot her as she's driving away, right?
Right.
And then rob her?
So he robbed her after he shot her. He shot
took
her.
Took something out of her car.
So
yeah.
He shot her and he talked to her. And then as he's walking away, he turns around and shoots her in the back through the upper part of the seat. And it lodges up and like up between her shoulders and near her spine. And then
severs her spine, yes.
Okay, and then she kind of guides the car across the street into another parking lot. He follows her, parks his car, gets out of his car, walks over to
her. Well, he watches
her.
She kind of circles around the parking lot. He sits up at the top of the parking lot and watches her. And I think at that point she was just probably in shock or so, because she died pretty quickly. So he watches her, and then I believe she runs into a curb, and then that's when he drives up to her, and that's in front of the Giant, with people out in front of the Giant, and behind them in the same, you know, at the top of the parking lot is the Boston Market. And there's witnesses at the Giant and the Boston Market. They're unloading at the Boston Market. So, and that's when he goes up to her and reaches over her and grabs something, puts the car in park. And then they said he slowly got in his car and slowly drove away and turned a right on York Road.
Okay. Did they describe what he took from the car? Like, was it a backpack, or is that something that they're holding?
I don't think they know. That's why they say, if we know, you know, that would help, you know, along with the video. I mean, that's something they've said in the news. They say, if we know what was taken out of the car, that would help solve the case. And then, you know, when I, with the meeting that they said, if in the meeting I had with them, the video, you know, if we could enhance that video. But so if that could solve the case, if that's like the one thing that could solve the case, why aren't you doing everything you can to enhance it?
Despite having witnesses and video evidence, police are struggling to find suspects.
Ever, obviously, he doesn't match the description, but was her boyfriend that she'd broken up with that morning, was he ever a suspect?
You know, not a suspect, but, you know, of course, they took him in and interviewed him, you know, but never, not a suspect, but they, because they lived together and had a relationship, they interviewed him a lot, you know.
Right, and your family didn't feel that he was good for it?
No, he was very good to her, and, I mean, we were close with him and still friendly with him today.
Okay.
It was, I mean, it was, you know, he had a lot of guilt with telling her not to come home, you know.
Right. He never imagined nobody.
Yeah, and the thing about where she was, I mean, she actually was right next to her house where she died. I mean, it was like within a minute or so of her house. Yeah, a couple, you know, like a minute or two. I mean, it was fairly like, I mean, it's just like nothing. It was like one of those scenarios where nothing like that happened, you know. It's just, it was just such a shock. Do you know what I mean? Like it just wasn't an area you would think this would happen.
The killer was brazen.
You
know, he could
definitely
see the people at the Giant. He could see the people at the Boston Market, and he did not care.
And the gas station. There was a gas station parallel to the Caldor lot right there, and that was a 24-hour. I believe that's where they heard the shot, or I think it was heard the shot. I believe it was somebody there that called the police. We have raised a $32,000 reward. I don't know if you saw that as well.
I did, and that's fantastic.
Yes, and that's through Metro Crime Stoppers.
Despite eyewitness accounts, video evidence, ballistic evidence, and fingerprints, no one has ever been arrested or charged in Jody's death. After 21 years, the family has grown impatient with waiting for Baltimore County Police to give her case the attention it deserves.
And the thing I did want to say, too, is I realize that they have a lot of cases. I mean, I get that. I know that they're overwhelmed. But the issue that I have is with, if there's leads to follow up on and there's things that can be done on her case, why are they not doing it? And they're getting offered help. I mean, in the last meeting, they tell me that they have so many cases. I mean, and the detective tells me that, you know, he would tell me that in the messages, you know, you're not the only one. I've got this person. And, you know, he would drag out of these stories and tell me things. It's like, I know that. But why not, if you have all this information, why aren't you following up on it? So does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And yes, they all have a lot of cases, and every case where someone is murdered is important.
Sorry, the last thing I'll say, they said, you know, they needed the time and money to do these things. You know, when I'm talking about going to visit this suspect that's pretty local, you know, in Maryland.
Right.
And why not let Baltimore City go down and do it if you don't have the time to do it or the money to pay the guys to do it? Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. And saying they don't have the time, It's been 21 years.
Right. Yeah.
That's a really long time to not find, let's call it 4 hours, to drive down,
yeah,
talk to somebody, and drive back.
I know. I have to say this because this is just what it was. Another, you know, one of the things that, like others, that hurt my feelings with them is when I was talking, you know, with there was the captain of the unit, the lieutenant, and the main detective, and his boss, and you know, if you were all having a meeting, and I just felt the whole time that they did not want to be there. And when I'm asking about who's local, or, you know, when are you going to go see him, and they're saying, you know, about the time and the money, and the detective says, well, I'll make my way down there. There's a great crab cake restaurant down there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In front of his boss. And yeah, so he's talking about going to go interview somebody who might have killed my sister, and talking about going to get a crab cake.
There are three persons of interest in this case. The man dating Jody's friend, the man associated with the bar that is known to law enforcement, and a third suspect, a man with a history of violence. All three match the physical description of the suspect, but only one boasted of killing a white woman in the Calder parking lot. He is currently in custody for another crime, yet police haven't found time to interview him about the murder.
Been in and out, arrested. So he was locked up. He got prosecuted in Anne Arundel County, which is, you know, a little bit outside of Baltimore,
right,
towards Annapolis. Like, basically, you guys should be okay now. He's locked up, but never convicted him. Does that make sense?
Right.
So we sort of went with that for all these years, hoping, you know, that they're going to find something. And, you know, one of the there's lots of things that they said they were going to work on. And one of the things was, you know, this kid had DNA on a, somehow, I think it was on, there was a, I think it was like another murder. They thought he had something to do with another murder in another county. And they were going to try to, they would tell me this, they're going to try to get with the prosecutors of that county and try to maybe make a deal with him, you know, try to talk to him. Does that make sense? About
right.
This other,
it, they were going to so use that, it as leverage.
Right. They said they were going to do it. That never happened. Also, I'm not sure how many years back, told a prostitute, so a prostitute got brought in. She said that she was with and that he told her he shot a white girl in the Caldor parking lot. And so they were going to wiretap her and, you know, see if he could get that. You know what I mean? And I don't know, I don't know that I believe this story, or, but what they were going to do was put an ad in the paper about Jody's murder, like,
right,
put something, not an ad, but put something in the paper, being that they would, it would bring it up, and then that he would talk about it or something. But I can't imagine that they're sitting around reading the paper, really. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
So what happened was they never followed through. They said, Detective Bollinger said he got arrested for threatening his wife. You know, he's been arrested several times. He got arrested for threatening his wife. We could not follow through. We had to save one life, meeting his wife, versus following through on Jody's case. Does that make sense? So they never did anything else about it. So for years, I'd say, when are you going to go talk to, you know, because he's, I said, well, what can you do? You know, I could go talk to him, you know, and he's local.
Where is your lawsuit at currently against the county?
Okay, so filed the lawsuit. They had 30 days to respond. They responded on the 30th day, last hour, and basically were, you know, denied everything, got caught up in technicalities. They said, you know, we're not a legal entity. You can't sue the police department. You would have to sue the county. So my lawyer said, technically, that's not really true, but he ended up amending the suit. In their response, they're asking me to pay their legal fees.
Yeah.
And so he amended the suit and came back with, you know, adding Baltimore County to the suit. And in the meantime, we got together and, you know, they denied everything, the case file, everything, saying it's under investigation, her case. So in the meantime, I got together with my lawyer and we talked about doing a letter, talking to the police department about trying to negotiate. Could we, what I'm hearing is one of the reasons, you know, for my lawyer is that they'll keep fighting because they don't want to set precedent to give me the case file than it would for other help with other families. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yes.
So that would be a reason. And also, I think my opinion, and I think others, that they've mishandled her file. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So, especially when you have the same gentleman working on it for 20 years.
Yes, yes. So he wrote a letter saying, you know, can we talk about getting the file outside of court? You know, trying to negotiate with them, especially now since we have leverage. Her case is in the news, and you know, Baltimore County's had some issues. You know, and I'm not going away. I'm not going to stop.
Right.
They have not responded to that letter. It's been several weeks. He also wrote a letter, you know, because our next step was to do depositions and interrogatories.
Yes.
So he also wrote a letter in December to the judge asking that we could do them in the court, you know, in the judge's chambers, that because he's saying that once we start these depositions, they're going to object to everything. And he thought, you know, we could possibly do them in the judge's chambers. So they wouldn't object to everything, that,
right.
you know, or so it could be smoother process.
Yes,
and
because
so,
if they're
so
going
the police,
to object, the judge can then direct them that yes, they need to answer it, or no, they don't have to.
So the judge and the police have ignored these letters, and my lawyer is very fired up about everything. I mean, yeah. So they've ignored these letters. One of the things, if they're so concerned about the case being out, you know, giving the case file out to the family, you know, here the detective is on social media and publishing crime scene photos in People magazine and, you know, things like
right.
that. So it's like, it, you know,
you can't
he's
have
on
it both ways.
Right, right. And he's got the deposition date for March 2nd, which I thought was, yeah.
If you didn't catch that, the deposition in Jenny's lawsuit is scheduled for March 2nd, the anniversary of Jody's murder. I've learned that there are three persons of interest in this case. One was a man that dated one of Jody's friends. The man was discounted by law enforcement because he didn't drive. But at the time of Jody's murder, he was dating Jody's friend who drove a white Volkswagen, a vehicle similar to the white BMW described by witnesses. He also matched the physical description, given by witnesses, of a black male, 25 to 30 years of age, 5'10" to 6 feet tall, about 200 to 220 pounds, wearing a green fatigue-style coat and driving a white car, possibly a BMW. Today, the perpetrator of this crime would be in his late 40s or early 50s. Remember, Jody was anxious, frightened by city life. She was under great stress because of the fight with her longtime boyfriend. She wouldn't have rolled down her car window for just anyone, making it likely that she knew her killer. Another person of interest was a man who frequented the Mount Washington Tavern. Jody had been around him in social settings outside of the bar. This man was known to law enforcement as a drug dealer. He also matched the physical description of the suspect given by witnesses. Acquaintances reported that he was known to carry a gun. If this man were to approach Jody in a parking lot, she would be comfortable talking to him. He's someone she would roll down the window for. Finally, a third suspect emerged later. This man is in prison for violent crimes. He is being held in Maryland and has not yet been interviewed by law enforcement in this case. This man is a violent criminal who boasted to an associate that he, quote, shot a white girl in the Calder parking lot. This information was given to law enforcement by an informant. Jody's family was told by detectives that this was the guy. When the family asked about seeing him prosecuted for her murder, they were told that he was already in custody and would be for a long time. Could he be the shooter who watched as Jody drove her car slowly through the parking lot, then strolled over to her vehicle, helped himself to something in the front seat, and calmly drove away? So many of the cases we discuss suffer from a lack of evidence and a lack of suspects. Jody's murder is different. We have witnesses, video evidence, fingerprints, ballistics, plus 3 plausible suspects. Other cases have gone cold and sit on a shelf. Not this case. The detective assigned in 1996 remains assigned to the case. It should be a perfect scenario for solving her murder, but here we are, 20 years later, and it's still unsolved. They are no closer to making an arrest now than they were in 1996. Metro Crime Stoppers has a reward of $32,000 leading to the arrest and conviction of the person responsible for Jody's death. There has also been a GoFundMe established to help pay for the legal fees involved in getting the case re-examined by an agency other than Baltimore County Police. I have included a link to the GoFundMe on my website, alreadygonepodcast.com. If you have tips or information, or if you had contact with Jody LeCorno on March 1st, 1996, please reach out to Jenny by email at justiceforjody@gmail.com. That's J-U-S-T-I-C-E, the number 4, Jody, J-O-D-Y, @gmail.com. I want to thank Jenny Carreri for taking the time to talk with me. Our conversation lasted almost 2 hours, and I tried to break that long conversation down into shorter pieces that highlight Jody's case. If you have comments or feedback about the show, you can reach me by email, host@alreadygonepodcast.com. You can find me on Twitter @alreadygonepod, and find the show on Facebook. If you'd like to connect with other listeners, join the Already Gone podcast discussion group on Facebook. If you're enjoying the show, please take time to leave a positive review. Your reviews help other listeners discover the podcast and hear about these cases. Our music is created by Luke Superior. You can check out his work on SoundCloud. And thank you for listening to the Already Gone podcast. Please be good to each other.
solve it. Very strange.